It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds. The Carlton Complex fire in the Mettow Valley has burned for more than 2 weeks now. In fact, it's burned more than 251,000 acres, making it the largest wildfire in state history. And it's one of only of many wildfires that plague Washington every year. It's like a game of whack-a-mole. It seems the more we put out, the more pop up. So are we approaching wildfires in the best way? I spoke to Susan Pritchard, a research scientist at the University of Washington School of Environmental and Forest Sciences. Susan specializes in wildfires and forest ecology and lives near Winthrop in the Mettow Valley, near the devastation of the Carlton Complex fires.
This was a fire to remember. We had a flood in 1948 that people still talk about because it really inundated Winthrop and Twist. And we've been kind of referring to the Carlton Complex fires as the equivalent to the flood of 1948 for us. For me, as a fire ecologist, I couldn't even really grasp the implications of the fire for my field for the first few days because we immediately had very limited cell phone contact, no power, no landline phone for a little while, and it was back to the basics. It was actually bathing in the river basics.
So a bit of hardship, but very interesting for you as a research scientist in forest sciences. And fire has always been part of Washington's landscape, wasn't it? How common was it before the settlers arrived?
Very common. When we talk about fire frequency, we really need to preface this by first defining what forest types we're referring to. And so in my backyard and in a lot of the Mettow Valley lowlands, there's a combination of dry ponderosa pine Douglas fir forests. And in those forests, fire frequency was anywhere between every 5 years up to about 25 years. When fires did occur, they were generally low intensity and did not necessarily kill the fire-tolerant trees that were also in the landscape.
Yeah, we think of fires as destructive, but wildfires serve a place in the ecosystem?
Oh, definitely. In our landscape, the trees, the shrubs, the grasses have all evolved with fire, and they're fire dependent. And so the frequent fires served a lot of purposes. The fire-tolerant species were maintained with those fires, the frequent fires, and we call that actually resiliency. So if there were frequent fires, that meant in many cases the subsequent fires were light and not as damaging as they would be if fire intervals increased.
I understand the name Mettow Valley is associated with a flower and is part of the story of how fires have affected the plant life?
Yes. So the story that I've been told is that the Mettow Indians actually called themselves Mettow, and also their word for the balsam root sunflower was Mettow. In the spring, when we have a really great spring, you can just see this yellow hue to many of our grassy hill slopes above the valley floor. It's a pretty amazing species. It's very deeply rooted. It's not one that you could easily transplant into your backyard. But that deep taproot is one of its traits that makes it so well adapted to fire. So imagine that next spring, after the Carlton Complex smoke clears, we will have amazing balsam root spreading up across our valley.
Fires used to not be fought up until 1910 when the big burn took place. Then that was one of the first wildfires that the federal government stepped in to battle. And since then, that's kind of been the policy. How have those policies affected the prevalence of wildfires?
Even before we got pretty good at putting out fires, which was right around World War II, the fire frequency had shifted. A lot of the Aboriginal burning practices had stopped. We had a lot of grazing. Agriculture came, which reduced our grasslands in the mosaic between forests. And all of those factors, including some selective logging of the fire-tolerant species, kind of led to the situation we have now.
I'm talking to Susan Pritchard. She's a fire and landscape ecologist at the University of Washington. What are some of the newer ways of managing plant growth, and how have they played into this?
A key word that many of us are talking about right now is how to encourage fire-resilient landscapes. And from the scale of an individual forest, or what we call a stand, some of that resiliency would be actually coming in to an area and doing thinning. So removing some of the small trees and leaving the large trees, reducing the ladder fuels. And then across landscapes, some of the tools that we're discussing and actually managers are implementing are more of using prescribed fern in large areas, or even in some cases, there's talk of actually managing wildfires during mild seasons or at the end of a fire season to do some of that work. A fire-resilient landscape would really have a patchwork mosaic of different sand ages, and that mosaic would hopefully actually constrain the spread of fire in some areas.
Despite all these wildfires, people love to live in and near wooded areas, but they don't always follow the recommendations for creating a defensible perimeter around their homes. How's that affecting fire management strategies?
I resemble that remark for sure. I live here because I love the outdoors and I love being close to these forests, but that also, you know, causes some conflict in our priorities. So none of us like smoke. Right now, the Metau Valley is getting a good dose of wildfire smoke, but in the spring and the fall, oftentimes we do have some smoke from prescribed burning, and that can be a real issue for people. It's not trivial for those people with heart conditions or asthma, and so we need to balance our need for fire on this landscape with human health.
How stark are those conflicts? You know, there's a big discussion about people living in flood zones and getting federal insurance and the idea that maybe we should just be buying those people out and not allow them to live there. Do you think it's gotten that serious when it comes to where people live and close proximity to places where there are wildfires?
I think it's really a consideration for landowners, and maybe one that we are just starting, the public's just starting to become more aware of, that there are some areas where it's not necessarily safe to have a house, you know, densely forested canyons that could be a fire trap. Also, people are coming together and creating fire-wise communities and pitching in resources to do the thinning that a lot of these forests actually need as we promote the resilience of these landscapes to fire. Hopefully, we'll also create some fire-adapted human communities as well.
There are more and more fires, and there's more and more money spent fighting those fires. When you think about policies that might help to make fires more manageable or not occur in the first place, what do you think of?
One of the first things that I think about is that it would be excellent if we could have the Forest Service and other federal agencies not need to use the same funds to fight fires as they need to use for the really important job of treating fuels on these landscapes. The dry forest landscapes have a backlog of fuels, and it would be excellent if we could retain and even increase our funding to get that work done.
Yeah, U.S. Senator Ron Wyden has pinpointed that, saying we're taking money to fight fires that we should be using to prevent fires or mitigate fires.
I would think that fighting fires is important as well. You know, having lived in the Metau through this Carlton Complex fire, I have to just say that I really appreciate the work that the firefighters are doing in this area. So we're going to be spending money on fighting fires, but I think we can become smarter about it in some areas. And also this idea of actually having emergency funds for the big fires, such as the Carlton Complex, available to use much in the same way that FEMA does for flood disasters and other natural disasters is a great idea, because we do need those funds available for the important job of fuel treatment.
How is climate change affecting the likelihood for forest fires?
Climate change is a big issue for wildfires. One of our best safety nets for not having a big fire season is actually winter snowpack. And this last winter was a little worrisome, particularly in Oregon and California, where they had much lower than average snowpacks. We in Washington actually got a kind of late snowfall, and so we were looking a little bit better. But that's all to say that with warming, what's predicted in the Pacific Northwest is warmer and drier summers and warmer and wetter winters. And so that will really, on average, extend the fire season. And if we get lightning ignitions, as we did just recently in the Metau Valley, combined with those dry, hot summers, we can expect more wildfires.
That's Susan Pritchard, a research scientist at the University of Washington School of Environmental and Forest Sciences. We spoke to her near her home in Winthrop in the Metau Valley, where they were suffering from some of the effects of that forest fire that led them to have to take a bath in the river.